Hi, I'm Russell, and I work at The Video Store, the place that you can go to every week when you're looking for something to watch. Behind the counter, with my friends, I get to talk about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Nails it.
Good morning, Russ.
How are you, my G-Force?
I'm good, dude. How are you?
Another mizzy day in Africa.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
I kind of like it, too.
Okay, good.
My grandfather arrived on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
From England.
Right.
And so I am not meant for Africa.
Yeah.
I would be what you would call a schwitzy guy. So like November, December is usually a really like cuck time of the year for me.
Yeah.
So when it gets a bit cold, I like it.
Yes, same.
G-Force, you are very much an editor and a producer of the podcast.
Good morning.
We're not working at the video store.
Yeah.
And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope.
Yeah.
Which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. Thank you for wandering into our lovely video store here. We've got lots of things to talk about.
Yes.
Oh, look at that.
What?
Our first customer of the day.
Yes.
We've got ourselves a Claudia.
Hey, guys.
Good morning.
How's it? We were just opening up.
Yeah.
We were just getting started.
Yeah, I was just around.
Yeah, Claudia and I and Cole actually all used to work together. We worked at a place called New Reality, which has become VTS, Virtual Training Studios, I believe.
Yeah.
They do like VR immersive, you know, training, upskilling kind of videos and kind of general 3D stuff as well.
Have you got something to return?
I do. It would be that Frankenstein movie everyone's talking about.
Cool. We are definitely going to talk about Frankenstein today.
Mm.
It finally arrived.
Yes.
Claudia, I have, for most of my life, never been the guy who's like read the book before the movie, just because I was a bit more like outside playing cricket as a teenager.
Yeah.
So I missed touching grass, as they say.
Yeah. I missed a lot of reading.
Yeah.
I made up for it once I went to varsity and I did English Lit, and I purposefully chose that so that I could catch up and feel like I could talk my way through a bookstore.
Yes.
And then when I knew Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein was on the horizon, I was like, now's a good time to read it. Mm. So it was like last year.
It was pretty recently. I remember you talking about it.
So it was very exciting to watch.
Great book.
Yes.
Great book.
Incredible book.
You know quite a lot of the backstory of it.
Like Mary Shelley writing it. Yeah, a bit.
Yeah, so I'd love you to explain that.
Cool. I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can talk about the book.
No, yeah, you haven't. I saw it. Claudia, you've obviously seen it. You're returning the DVD here. This weekend is when it hit Netflix.
Yeah.
And I feel like I sold it really well to my lovely wife.
Oh, cool.
Who is a little bit of a normie. I was like, so this guy, who is a very meticulous, very intentional creature, horror guy,
yes,
filmmaker, has always wanted to make this movie. This is the movie he was destined to make. This is the most important film he might make at this point in his career. We need to watch it.
Yeah, so many of his previous films are kind of riffs on Frankenstein in a way.
Yeah, and you just get the sense that like Guillermo del Toro was, this was his.
Yes.
It's like anyone else who thought they wanted to make one would sort of step aside so that this guy should get this done. It should be like, it should get it out of his system.
This is what he's been building up to.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It's been very cool to see the exhibitions that have traveled with him and that he's set up with a lot of the practical costumes.
Cool.
But we'll get into it.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. What else can we talk about?
Predator Badlands. Colin and I saw Predator Badlands last week.
Yeah, you guys went to the press screening of that.
Yeah, and then Pluribus just started on Apple TV.
Yes,
we spoke about the trailer. I did start it. We can talk about that as well. This is Vince Gilligan's new show.
Okay. I got the chance to go to a few exhibitor screenings. So
cool.
I'm not I still don't know whether I can talk about these movies.
Yes.
But they didn't make me sign anything.
I was going to say, if you didn't sign anything, then...
I think I can.
I think so.
So yeah, I managed to see Eternity, which is the A24 film that's coming out at the end of the month.
Elizabeth Olsen.
Elizabeth Olsen. Who was the Goose's son in Maverick?
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller, the drummer.
And then Callum Turner's the other guy.
And then the handsome Callum Turner. I saw that. Myself and Perrin went to go watch The Running Man.
Oh, cool.
Special exhibitor screening of
that. Oh, shit.
So I can touch on that.
Jelly.
Yeah. the new Edgar Wright film.
Yes.
And then I had, which I will get to later, is a lovely twin flame coincidence then happened when we picked a random movie on Netflix, and I was astounded at how similar it was to Running Man.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Almost like it has to have been inspired by, but it's not the same film at all. And so it's wild to see the two together.
Mm.
So I'll get into that. Yeah, there's a little bit of interesting TV to talk about. All's Fair,
Which
is, the funniest thing in the world.
Right.
So yeah, we'll get into all of
that. Okay, good.
Okay. Should we start with a little round of, hey, did you guys see?
Let's do that.
Okay, who wants to kick it off?
I can kick it off. Hey, did you guys see, apparently, so this is something that's been spoken about for years, but apparently Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz are now officially in talks for Mummy 4.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So it might actually be happening.
It felt
still my 12-year-old heart.
Right?
I mean, come on.
Yeah, just one of the all-time greats. And like also just one of the best like on-screen couples of all time.
Yes.
Like their chemistry is unbelievable.
I think we're due to bring the movie back.
Yeah.
The first one. There was this little moment in social media about a year ago.
Yeah.
When everyone was like, can we all agree it's a cinematic masterpiece?
Yes.
Like, it's the most perfect movie ever.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I love to see those trends happen where obviously people of a certain age or a certain age now, there's enough time between now and then. And so this was a 1999 film,
yes.
The Mummy, that really was the main one. The sequels were okay, and then they descended into further and further obscurity.
Mm.
But the main one...
Yeah, that first
is
one.
...is the one, and it's like... It's a perfect film.
Yeah.
In a way, it's also kind of perfectly timed because the Grand Egyptian Museum has finally opened.
That's true.
So there's like a lovely little stars aligning.
Yes.
When the Bioscope had to make a welcome mat.
Yep.
I could have very easily done what every other business in the world does, which is put the name of your business on the welcome mat.
Exactly.
You'll love this. It was originally needed to be that big.
Yeah.
And exist because we were getting cracks in the floor below because we've got this old factory space.
Yes, the old concrete floor.
We've since redone that concrete, so it's not needed, but it is needed
to
have this welcome mat. So I wanted it to be red because, you know, the
red carpet. Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to put the Bioscope's name on it. I'm literally going to take word for word what that bumper sticker says that went viral. Which is, I would rather be watching the 1999 cinematic masterpiece, The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz.
Yes.
That's what's written on the carpet of the Bioscope. And it's lovely. Every now and again, someone looks down, reads it, chuckles, and walks out.
Exactly.
Like when they visit or when they come in, and like that's all I need.
Yeah.
But yeah, so as you said, it was announced this week that Mummy 4 will be a thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully it happens.
Yes.
So far, no one has...
Nothing's official at this point. They're you know, quote unquote, in talks, which is they're, you know, banging out contracts and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I think it'll happen. I think there's enough like enthusiasm and enough of a groundswell for them to be like, yeah, I think it's time.
Yeah.
Totally. And as we know, this one is the easy one.
Yeah.
Like Hollywood will want this.
Exactly.
They want to make money.
Yep.
Where it goes wrong is when the movie's bad.
Yeah.
Or if the actors don't want to do it or can't do it for whatever reason. But, like, I think the industry wants it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the audience wants it. So hopefully it happens.
Exactly.
Claudia?
Hey, have you guys heard or
you gotta
seen.
Say, you gotta say, hey, did you guys see?
Hey, did you guys see the new Michael Jackson biopic trailer?
Yes, it finally got a trailer after many, many delays. It was supposed to be out like a while ago, but they've kept pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back. And now it finally has a teaser trailer.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm a little bit on the fence about it.
Yes.
Yeah, because I know one shouldn't ask a lady how old they are, but how old are you?
37.
37. Okay, so you're kind of roughly, you're in my
we're all
sort of
roughly
millennial
the same
bracket.
Mm.
And I think we are the generation that got fucking creeped out by Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
I think anyone older than 40, so from like 45 upwards, you were like, you loved him.
Yes.
No, I'm generalizing, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we were the generation that grew up with, like, the weird Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Yes.
We were more conscious in the later part of his career, where we were like, in what conceivable world would you give your child over for a sleepover, no matter how fucking famous he is, with a grown man?
Mm-hmm.
In what fucking world?
Yeah.
Like, let's pick a random 40, 50 year old celebrity.
Yes.
Pick one.
Lord, I don't know how old anyone is. Daniel Craig. I don't know how old he is. 50 something.
Imagine just being like, it's Daniel Craig, it's James Bond.
Yes.
Like, my 13 year old son can sleep over at your house. Of course.
Yeah.
Like, what fucking world? So, like, anyways, I found myself in a room last week with the distributors who were excited about the fact that it's coming.
Okay.
And other folks in the room were like, yeah, I've always been a big fan.
Mm.
I just kept quiet because I was like, I'm sorry, guys. If they had to ask me, I'd be like, I fall into the camp of like, creeped out by the dude.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now this is made by the same people who brought you Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes. And they put the love from the producer of Bohemian Rhapsody. Everyone hates Bohemian Rhapsody. Dude.
Well,
don't market your movie on
the
that.
The normies fucking love it.
Yeah.
The normies love it because it was this glossy, you know, cookie cutter, you know, biopic.
Yes.
Just presented so well.
Yeah.
And it was made by the members of the band.
Yeah, which is part of the problem.
And exactly. And now Michael is being made by the estate, right?
Yeah, it's his nephew playing him.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's his own nephew that's playing Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Which is like...
Yeah. I believe I also saw a little flash of, what's his name? Miles Teller.
Yeah, Miles Teller's in this as well.
Yeah, Miles Teller's like sitting at a board, sitting at a boardroom table. Anton Fuqua is the director.
Yeah.
What does that mean anything to us? I get a bit mixed up between him and Barry Jenkins.
What did
Fuqua do?
Training Day?
Fuqua's Training Day.
Training Day, yeah.
Okay.
Mm, and
that was quite hardcore.
Yes.
Yeah,
so that's not there's no fucking around.
No.
But that's interesting.
Mm. Yeah, Training Day, The Equalizer.
Okay. Loves a good little Denzel pick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm very... I don't even know if I'm on the fence. I just don't really want to see it.
Yeah.
Very
very glossy, like you said, very appealing trailer for normies.
No, but, and I just think the study and the most interesting aspect of him is just how incredibly famous he was.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think that, like, there's just no question of just how famous he was.
Yes. Like, in comparison to, like, modern people, like, we think of someone as Taylor Swift as being huge.
Mm.
Comparatively, Michael Jackson was, like, orders of magnitude more famous than her.
Good. Yeah.
Like, the shows he did were enormous.
But it was just that he came at a time when we were firmly in the monoculture.
Mm.
And so, like, this was just the big guy.
Yeah.
And also, I just still find it fucking amazing that he changed races. I just like in my head, because I probably wasn't there day to day.
Yeah.
But it's like no one else in the fucking history of entertainment has done something like that.
Right.
And we all just accept it. Like, oh, that's when he was a black man. It's like, and now that's when he was a white guy. It's like, fuck. And he did a song to kind of like, you know, chapterize it. And it was a banger.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, are we all just okay with this?
I guess.
It's just like, fucking hell. Weirdest fucking dude ever.
Yeah.
And then you hear one story about how, like, as a kid, he was, like, surgically castrated.
Oh.
They, like, his family kind of fucked with his own genetics.
Yes.
To keep that sort of high-pitched voice.
And right.
So you hear that, and you don't know whether that's true, but that also just feels oddly on brand.
He was also famous from such a young age.
Yeah.
Like, the Jackson 5, he was a kid. He's been, like, famous ever since then. He kind of didn't have a normal upbringing or a normal child. He would do things like, as an adult, he would have like a grocery store shut down entirely so he could walk around with a shopping cart and just shop like a normal person. Because like he couldn't do anything as a normal person because he was the most famous man in the world.
Yeah, it's wild. What it's immediately making me think of, which I loved hearing, is that Dolly Parton very largely has wigs.
Mm.
The blonde that you see perhaps later in life, maybe earlier in life, it was her real hair.
Yeah.
But it's very much a wig. Mm. And, you know, she's got this husband that we don't ever really see or kind of know because he wants to sort of stay out of public life.
Yeah.
It's amazing how easy you can stay out of public life.
Yeah.
It's amazing how easy it actually is if you choose from the beginning to stay out.
Yeah.
And apparently she goes out with him. In different clothes, like more plain clothes, not with her wig, with her husband, and goes largely undetected.
Okay.
Yeah.
How wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was their thing shortly before he passed.
Okay.
Because he did pass away quite recently. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That was one of the things that she brought up, and she said that that's something that her husband gives her, is like that sense of normalcy. Mm. Yep. She can just be herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Went out with him. Cool. Otherwise, it's just, hey, Dolly.
Yes. Yeah.
I've driven past the gates of Dollywood.
Oh, right.
She took over a smaller little theme park that existed in this really wild part of America called Pigeon Forge.
Oh.
It's, you know, like there's little pockets of Harderbeerspoort where... Yes. There's the upside down house and little sort of themed things. Yes. Imagine a whole town of that.
Right.
Where there's like a giant Titanic ship and you can eat inside.
It's just a whole town of tourist traps.
Exactly. Yes. And there's the huge upside down house. And then there's the sort of earthquake house. And it's like, it's the strangest town ever. And so in there was a roller coaster theme park place. And she bought it a long time ago and transformed it into Dollywood. Because she can.
Because she can.
And because you can do, in America, that's what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just wild that you can have this whole town full of this stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, I got one.
Go.
Hey, did you guys see the upcoming film, Now You See Me, Now You Don't?
Oh, yeah.
Is giving the world its first South African villain since Lethal Weapon 2.
Oh.
I just love how there's a whole generation of films where all the villains are Russian.
Yes.
And they kind of continue to be. They're like default to being Russian.
Yeah.
Ukrainian.
Yeah.
Kind of like some obscure Eastern European. There were obviously a lot of brown villains that were perhaps more Arab.
Yes.
In a certain point in Hollywood. But at the height of apartheid in like the early 90s, we got Lethal Weapon 2, where we got, you know, these like baddies that were South African.
Yeah.
And so now we're getting another one. And so, yeah, Now You See Me, Now You Don't is the third film in that trilogy of like magic heist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is a genre on its own. Jesse Eisenberg, Morgan Freeman.
Surprisingly stacked cast.
Franco. Yeah. Franco.
Isla Fisher.
Fisher's
Isn't Woody Harrelson in?
Woody Harrelson.
Is he in the third one as well?
He's the hypnotist.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, in this band of magicians who call themselves the Three Horsemen, Four Horsemen.
Okay.
Anyways, they charming, fun, sort of heisty magic films.
Okay.
Magic films are nice because the movie itself becomes a magic show.
Yes.
And this is the third one where we have Veronica Funderburg.
All right.
Ooh. And it is played by Gone Girl.
Oh.
The Gone Girl.
The girl Rosamund who, Pike.
Rosamund Pike. There we Thank
go.
You.
Yeah.
And let me tell you.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, folks, her fucking accent is incredible.
Really?
It is incredible.
Dang.
There is not much in the trailer.
Yeah.
What you get from the trailer is that she's almost like a Oppenheimer, not the bomb creator, the diamond family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you get the impression that she's built this incredible wealth through mining in South Africa, and she's now a baddie doing bad things. And so there was this great interview with a guy going, you know, how did you get the South African accent? And she spoke about how, you know, you got to pin it to certain words and how the South Africans do this and that. And she honestly, if you closed your eyes in that interview, you would think she was a woman behind you in the line at a Woolies. And he even gave her a line from, like, I think it's Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, right.
To say, like, okay, well, teach me, how would you say this?
Yes.
And the way she said it, it's like, we'll find that clip somewhere.
Okay.
And put it in the description below. But she nails it. And why she nails it is because she's British.
Yeah.
Mm.
An American can't do it.
Yeah.
And we've seen it happen a few times. Leonardo DiCaprio,
yes.
buy your wife something pretty. And so, yeah, I just think that this is going to join a list that I don't think we've created. Let's create it now.
Okay. Mm.
Of the best South African,
yeah.
The best Safa moment, best Safa characters. What stands out? Okay, so obviously Lethal Weapon 2. Lethal Weapon 2.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yes.
Did I tell you the poker story?
No.
I met these dudes. I hung out with these guys in New York.
Yeah.
Obviously, I knew one guy, and then he invited me to this poker night. And when the dudes found out I was South African,
yeah.
their only point of reference
was Lethal Weapon 2.
So, and I did pretty well at poker.
Yes.
Like, I don't know, maybe because I was the new guy and they didn't know my tells or whatever. And when I was like, you know, kind of unfairly winning in his eyes, he just looked at me. He's like, diplomatic community. He kept saying it. Fuck, it's hilarious.
That's good.
One of the henchmen in Mission Impossible.
I was going to say Richard Roxburgh in Mission Impossible 2.
Yes.
What a turn.
Yeah. He actually, I don't think he's not South African.
No, he's Australian.
He's Australian. Yeah. And he was like, I'm going to get into it.
Yes.
I'm going to be South African. And there's a point where he like hurts his hand.
He's got like he's like the tip of his finger got cut off.
Yes.
And one of the other guys like bumps into him intentionally and he goes, Aina.
Aina.
Yeah.
That got, you can imagine him going deep yes. weeks of research to go, what would a South African do? I need to find out what a South African would do. Okay, that's a South African word. I need to be right by my character. What else?
Oh, we obviously mentioned Leo.
Yeah. He was
technically Rhodesian.
Yes. Yeah.
Technically Rhodesian.
But a little South African flavoring in there because he served, I think the character served in the South African military.
What I don't remember.
If I remember.
Blood Diamond.
Blood Diamond.
But that, the old Rhodesian accent is a little different, so he gets away with it not being like dead on.
Yeah.
I think about his performance, though, what stood out to me more than the accent was more the mannerisms.
Oh, right.
The pinching on the arm.
Okay.
Sort of like the way that he conducted himself as that character.
Okay.
It reminds me a lot of men from that era. And if you interact with them now, I think they're like mid to late 40s, maybe early 50s. Like,
yes.
They just have this like very particular way of like.
Okay.
Interacting.
Interesting.
And sort of like.
My one of my mom's best friends was a Rhodesian.
Okay. Mm.
And you could almost call them that. It's not wrong to call them that because when they were in Zimbabwe at the time, it was Rhodesia.
Yes.
They were Rhodesians.
And
it obviously did change.
Mm.
Yeah.
They all had nicknames.
Yes.
All of them. It's not like, oh, it's John, Graham, Claudia. It was like Hammer and fucking Bozo.
Right.
And they all had nicknames.
Yeah.
Wild. It was like a cultural thing.
Okay.
Wild. Okay.
Fascinating.
But sorry, part of Now You See Me, Now You Don't, obviously, is we've got the South African character.
Yes.
Veronica van der Berg. A few things to mention. The film also stars Dominic Sessa.
Okay.
Who is a highlight of the pod in that we have spoken about Holdovers and how he was this unknown, you know, actor who got found for Holdovers. And
yes.
He's now built this career. He was literally picked at random because they wanted school kids.
Exactly. Mm.
And they went to the school and he was in the class. It was like such a cool story. Mm. He's in it.
Nice.
But then there also is a South African that's in it.
Okay.
Because obviously he has, she's obviously got the South African entourage or people around her. So a dude by the name of Thabang Malaba is in it.
Cool.
Malaba. And so through the people who are distributing Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Mm.
Literally after this shift, I'm going to go watch the movie.
Cool.
And tomorrow, I have the opportunity to interview this guy.
Nice.
So, and he seems like a accomplished dude in his own right.
Nice.
So I think he'll be a really interesting guest.
Cool.
And someone who could talk about what it's like to be on this kind of big Hollywood set.
Yeah.
So yeah, exciting and cool. Even if we are the villains in this story.
yeah.
You know, we would prefer not to be.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, just to have better representation, like actually portraying our accent.
Sure. I mean,
I think more times, more often than not,
how do we
I cringe when I hear an accent, a South African accent in a Hollywood film.
How do we feel about Matt Damon?
Oh, no.
I actually never saw that movie.
Invictus.
Yeah.
No.
I skipped it.
It was very inconsistent for me.
Okay.
Sure. I thought it was just fine. I thought it was great.
Okay.
I thought he did a fine job.
Yes.
I have a lovely story about Invictus.
Oh, yes. Mm.
I met someone who was involved in recording and shooting the crowds.
Right.
In order to build the stadium.
Yes.
So obviously they could do that largely without the actors present. And they would get... It would basically film strips of the stadium.
Okay.
So that they could basically stitch them.
Yes.
And copy paste across the stadium. But they obviously want.
Because you can't get a stadium full of extras. Mm. Yeah. So you have to do it in.
Oh, a little detour. Have you heard about the company that has the blow up dolls?
Oh.
There's a company that exists that creates crowd scenes out of blow up dolls.
Yeah.
So that they can actually put them up in the crowd to fill up the stadium.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they just they're like crash test dummies with hats
and costumes.
And a whole company is dedicated to creating crowds.
Jeez.
But no, so they had to shoot these scenes, and then there were one or two moments where they had to have a strip of audience, but Matt Damon like run past or like run in front.
Yes.
So he was, this friend of mine was privy to those moments.
Okay.
And he said, this is so South African. There were one or two guys in the crowd that went, Matt Damon. And apparently he loved it. He like smiled and acknowledged
it. Okay, good.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, this is the reference to the South Park movie.
Yeah, for Team America.
Oh, Team America, which kind of shat on Matt Damon.
Yes.
Anyways.
Accidentally. Do you know the story behind that? Why they did that? When they were making the puppets, the mold for the Matt Damon one actually broke, so the puppet came out weird. So they're like, either let's make a new one, or let's like just use this and like somehow make a joke out of it.
And so he's
and that's how they arrived at Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Oh, Team America needs a. I don't know. It needs to be preserved in the what is the sort of video store version of. The Hall of Congress or whatever it's called, the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
We are going to get a Trey Parker, Matt Stone film.
With Kendrick Lamar.
It's been dated early next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on its way. We don't have a name for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually did, speaking of upcoming films getting names.
Yes.
I was privy to some post. I saw some post that did seem to give... some of these upcoming exciting movies names.
Oh, okay, cool.
They were talking about the big movies of next year.
Yes.
And this post, whether they maybe were bullshit or not, gave some of these movies names. The upcoming Spielberg UFO movie is going to be called The Disc.
The Dish.
The Dish.
Well, I think that might be a working title. I think that might change.
Okay.
I think they were listing that as a working title, as something that might be temporary.
Okay.
But it's, you know, up in the air, because that's out next year as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's exciting. And then the other one is Tom Cruise's next film is with Iñárritu.
Yeah.
Who, you know, cleaned up at the Oscars a few years ago.
Yeah.
And that film is called?
I don't remember. I remember you mentioned it in the group chat, but I don't remember what it was.
So that movie is going to be called Judy.
Okay.
Judy.
All right.
Like the girl's name, like a woman's name.
Judy.
And the other one, which was interesting, hey, did you guys see?
Yes.
What's the sequel to The Social Network is going to be called?
Oh, yes.
The Social Reckoning.
Yeah.
Social Reckoning. Did it really need to have a follow-up?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Time will tell, I guess.
What is the story of the follow-up?
I think it's about the like the lawsuit thing, the whole Facebook lawsuits that happened.
With
Zuckerberg, yeah. Taking the stand, all that stuff.
Do you want to make a great movie for Facebook? Is how we all slowly just stopped using it.
Yes. Everyone under a certain age stopped using it.
And just like where we all left off. Like, you know, there's that famous sort of meme-y post that you read, which was like, you know, one day you and your friends went out and played for the last time and you didn't know it.
Yeah.
You didn't know it then. So there's like a Facebook post, which is like, you didn't know it, but that photo of you at your friend's wedding, that was your last Facebook post. And then now, literally, its only job for me now is to know when people in my life have their birthday.
Oh, right.
There's no other way of knowing.
Yes.
No other way.
I've gradually added them to my Google Calendar, so I don't have to use Facebook for anything.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
Every member of my immediate family.
Yeah.
Has a birthday on a significant date.
Oh, right.
My mom is born on Guy Fawkes Day.
Oh, nice.
My dad is born on Freedom Day, the 27th of April.
Yeah.
My sister is Spring Day.
Okay.
And my wife is tax year end.
Tax year end.
The 28th of February.
So you will never forget.
Never. Hashtag never forget. All right. Yeah. Do we have any more?
Let me check quickly if there's anything pressing. You can go if you want to.
I have one.
Yeah, I'll go for it.
Have you guys seen the new Apple TV logo? Yes.
I know why you want to bring this up.
It's pretty slick.
You want to bring this up because of how they've made the logo, how they filmed it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Very practically.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So I believe instead of it just being, you know, your typical digital process.
Sort of 3D rendering, yeah.
Yeah. No, they actually did a very practical setup where I think they used Perspex glass.
I think so.
Of varying colors. And then they this like very sophisticated like camera setup where they are swooshing past it, getting nice big close-ups, and then just like overlaying it and then getting that you know, sort of like spectral, like color effect.
Yeah, it's got more color. And so this is when one sort of looks at an original Apple product, I think for like Apple films and their TV shows. It's very cool that that's practical.
Yeah.
It's very cool that that's well made. Because also they've rebranded something. What did they do again? You brought it up a while ago.
Oh, Apple TV.
Yeah. It's now just called Apple TV.
Yes, it's called Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
Okay. Which is a little confusing. We've brought this up before.
We've transcended the plus era.
Yes.
We were in the plus era because the world understood what that meant.
Yeah.
Which was like, this is the subscription bonus thing.
Yes.
Because I think Disney started it.
Yeah.
And then everyone else was like, Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Apple TV Plus. So now it's just Apple TV.
Yeah.
Some of which you pay for, some of which is free.
Yeah.
I mean, some of which is part of a subscription.
Yeah.
So it's a service that you can rent and buy movies through, and then there's also the subscription service for their own original content.
Yes.
I will say it and I will say it again.
Yeah.
Bang for buck or per capita, Apple is the best subscription.
Yeah, their stuff in general. They don't put out as much stuff as like Netflix,
but so you get far more with Netflix. Yeah, of course you do. And Disney is extensive.
Yeah, they have that catalog.
From the little that Apple produce, it's
quality.
Good.
Yeah. Tends to be higher quality,
Yeah.
No, like Netflix is just full of schlock to me.
Yeah.
It's like we started watching the Halloween edition of Is It Cake?
Oh.
Because we just want something simple on a Sunday night. We're all a bit tired.
Yeah.
Yes.
What are we going to watch?
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what Netflix is for me. Yeah. It's like a Love is Blind.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's brain rot shit, eh? Yossus. I sometimes have watched it over Leslie's shoulder, and it's like, I just feel so much more stupid.
Yeah.
After watching it. No, like listening to those people talk.
There genuinely is a lot of brain rot on there. Yeah. But I think just finishing off with the Apple logo sting, besides the very practical method or sort of like approach that they did for the visuals,
mm-hmm.
I believe Phineas? Billy Eilish's brother.
Phineas,
he did the little
music.
The jingle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
It's always cool when those like big name dudes get involved.
Yeah.
Like apparently Pharrell did I'm Loving It.
Yeah.
Oh. Really?
Yeah. Do, do, do,
do, do. Yes.
I'm Loving It.
Oh.
Okay.
And you almost laugh because you're like, that bro could have done that in 5 minutes and charged a buck ton, yeah. Bucket load. I wanted to say bucket load and fuck ton at the same time. So I said buck ton.
Yeah.
Buck ton.
A buck ton of money.
Yeah.
But you know what? He spent 20 years building himself to get to that point where he could spend 5 minutes to just go, dee, 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 dee. I'm loving it. And everyone goes, I love it.
Yeah.
Well done.
It makes so much sense, though, that you say that he did that and then happy.
Yeah.
It was a thing that came so many years later.
The Happy Meal. He probably secretly got handed a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because they were like, this could be the jingle for the Happy Meal. We're living in a lie, guys. Yeah. We're living in a fucking lie. All right. Should we get into some of the more substantial
chats? Let's do that.
Before we do that,
yeah,
I want to play a little game with you guys. We've got a fun little game here at the Bioscope called What Movie Am I?
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of cards. And on these cards are three or four lines that describe a movie. And let's do two.
Cool.
And we were thinking about how best to structure this because I want to include this in our video store shifts.
Yeah.
What I think we do is you just go, if you feel like you confidently have it, you go, I got it.
Okay.
And then we'll give the name of the movie at the end.
All right, cool.
Hey?
Cool.
Should we do that?
Yeah.
All right. I am science fiction.
Okay.
I have elaborate costumes. I was once the most expensive European movie ever made. Are you confident?
Okay.
Do you want to bank it? Okay. I'm going to keep going.
Cool.
Yeah.
I feature a breakthrough role by Mila Jovovich.
I know.
You got it.
I know.
You got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Yeah, I think I've got that.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then for those browsing the shelves, the last one is my plot involves finding four element stones.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that fucking gives it away.
Yes.
Right?
All right. So let us know in the comments below if you got it.
Yes.
Mm.
All right. Let's do one more.
Cool.
I don't know this movie.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, I don't know this one, so I wouldn't have... Okay. I am based on a young adult novel.
Okay.
I inspired a TV show with a similar title. Anonymous correspondence is central to my plot. I am an LGBTQ+ teen film. I feature a character codenamed Blue.
Oh.
I've never heard of this movie.
I'm not familiar enough with YA stuff.
I feel like I may know it.
Okay.
Okay.
But not...
I've never heard of this movie.
Okay.
50-50.
Never heard of it.
Okay.
Okay, let's do one more. Just because that one was a mute point. Okay. I'm a romantic comedy.
Okay.
I am based on a Hungarian play.
Oh, okay.
Like we would all know that. I am directed by Nora Ephron.
Okay.
I'm going to take out this third one because it's too obvious. I'm going to put that at the end. I am concerned around an online romance.
Okay.
You got it.
I think I do.
I think I do.
If I give the last one, it's too obvious.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You got it.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
The Hungarian play thing is interesting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Should we give the names of them now, or should we wait till the end?
Well, we can do them now, and then I can just put them at the end.
Okay. Well, it's also understanding the how would you want to listen to it. I think you'd want the gratification of knowing.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I think we should include them. It's just where we include them, that's the question. I think we put them at the end.
All right. Okay. Moving on.
Yes.
All right. Claudia, you have a copy of Frankenstein that you just brought back?
Yes.
I think let's get into it for a moment.
Cool.
Because, gee, you haven't seen it, so we're not going to get too gushy about it. What did you think?
I liked it.
Cool.
I think...
I also really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely came out a lot better than I thought.
But, I mean, I was very confident that he was going to nail it.
Yeah, yeah. I think this has been like a passion project of his. I think I said earlier, I think he's been building up to this.
Yeah.
And those themes of the father, son, who am I?
Mm.
Like, he's been building up to this.
Yeah.
I think like the whole misunderstood monster thing has been part of his films and for so long, going back to Hellboy, going back to Shape of Water, all these things.
Yeah. The recurring theme with him. And Frankenstein just feels like that natural, you know, story for him to tackle. Like, this is what he was meant to do. Yes. He was building up to this.
Cool.
Yeah.
He very famously has a cool house.
Oh, really?
There's a few of these more eccentric, creative people who very famously have cool houses.
Yes.
One of which is Jack White.
Okay.
Jack White.
Yes.
Jack White is the musician in the White Stripes.
Yes.
Jake White was a captain of he was the coach of the Springboks.
All right.
So sorry. Jack White famously has a very cool house that's very secretive.
But people
who have visited it have said it's going to be like a museum. Like when he dies, it would be a museum. Like the way you go and visit Graceland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And apparently Guillermo del Toro's house is very similar. He's collected like freakish, crazy monsters. So it's like, it's almost like this kind of sideshow circus kind of exhibition. You know, like Nightmare Alley was one of his last films, which wasn't really that good in my opinion. But I could see how...
Very forgettable.
Yeah, it was a little bit forgettable. But sort of, you know, that's the sort of freak show, circus-y world.
Yes.
Pan's Labyrinth is just incredible. Yeah. Just to sort of gloss over his career quick. Mm. I forgot that Pan's Labyrinth was in another fucking language.
Yes.
Like, it was so good that in my memory, it was English.
Right.
Like, I knew the story.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so here we have Frankenstein, which was, and I also, as we started Frankenstein, I also wanted to give the context to Leslie, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
As we were getting started, I paused and I was like, a lovely part of Frankenstein to know is just who wrote it and when.
Oh, yes.
How old was she? Do you know?
Very young.
She was
like
18, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say 18 or 19.
When she wrote it. And it was kind of like interesting. Like if you imagine like them back 1820s or something like that, and they're all like kind of like these young people, late teens, early 20s, just sitting around having an evening together, and they all decide, oh, let's have a writing competition like amongst ourselves, because they're all this, you know, these young literary types. And I mean, she was married to Lord Byron, right?
I think so.
Yeah. And they were like, oh, no, let's have a writing competition amongst ourselves, like, you know, whoever
just
can.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Like
shits and giggles, guys. Let's just write something.
A parlor game.
Yeah, exactly. That parlor game. There you go.
Think like Bridgerton era, like a woman, your sole job is to get linked to a man to make babies to continue the estate of your family.
Out of that little game came Frankenstein. That was her contribution.
And everyone else's story was probably more like, and she was destined to do this, and then she got married, or she didn't, or she fell in love, and she was like, a man builds a monster that comes to life. And everyone else must have been so freaked out.
Exactly.
Like, you little weirdo.
Okay, so it was 1818, so it was even earlier than I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is right. And she was married to Percy Shelley.
Percy Shelley. Yeah. There we go.
He's a contemporary of Lord Byron.
Lord Byron. Yeah. I think he was amongst them. Like, they were close knit circle.
And so what she really did is she gave us our first science fiction.
She invented a genre.
She basically was the first, or maybe there were others at the time, but this is the one that stuck out.
Yeah.
And do we know the story of it being published? Did it, like, was her name on it? Because a lot of the time, like, early Jane Austen didn't have her name, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because it was a little unheard of to have published female authors.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know much about that.
Yeah. But what I loved when I read the book was obviously you've got this science fiction of, you know, creating the monster.
Mm.
But that's just the tiny little starting point. Yeah. What the whole movie really is about is the relationship between Frankenstein and his monster and how this monster learns about the world. It's very similar to what you got from Poor Things, which is how you see the world and its cruelty and its beauty through the eyes of someone learning it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when this monster realizes it can't die, it really needs a partner. It needs someone to kind of go through life with.
Yeah.
And it's mostly about him wanting Victor to create that for him. He obviously doesn't want to bring more into the world.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, then I'm going to fuck your life up.
Yes.
And it's the trauma of him slowly, like, just fucking his life up.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
And sort of chasing him and kind of ruining his life.
Yeah.
So so it was cool. I think that the Guillermo del Toro one got that.
Cool.
And,
yeah.
And I think it was very true to it in that sense. I found it interesting to see what this Frankenstein looks like, because when we close our eyes, we've got that particular early Hollywood view of what the monster looks like. And it was quite cool to get Guillermo del Toro's
take on it,
which is a bit more pretty.
Yeah.
A bit more handsome. Mm. Obviously still fucking weird.
Yeah.
Mm. And it was cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. My one little, and I don't think this is any spoiler to you, Graham, but just... Yeah. Claudia, if you and I were chatting about it, one thing I thought was a little annoying was, like, when he does get fucked up and there are gashes or bullet wounds or things,
there's nothing left over,
the fact that it, like, regrows was a bit annoying to me. It's one thing to sort of keep alive, but I think it could have been cooler to just have him keep the cuts and the wounds.
There's Wolverine powers.
And no,
I don't think he should have regrown to perfect again.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
On one or two occasions. Like, I think it would have been cooler to have them, as the movie goes on, like, he's just more degraded and fucked up, but he's still alive.
Yeah, yeah. You feel like that.
There's a bit of Hollywood magic where it's like, oh, we're going to make him look like you kind of. Like,
okay.
No, there's no scarring left over when he gets injured. And he has his fair share of injuries in that film. Yeah.
They're hectic, which is cool. And that was cool to see.
Mm. Yes.
So that's why, like, I thought that should kind of remain.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my only little gripe.
Cool.
Mia Goth plays Elizabeth.
Okay.
I didn't think she was the best actress in this. And I know that she is an accomplished actress.
Yeah.
She seemed a bit stoic and a bit hammy.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that was the role and the writing and the intention. But she was fine. I mean, it wasn't a problem.
I mean, she definitely stood out as your sort of the color in the movie, let's say, like the life of the film, at least visually.
I think we will get costume nods.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
At the Oscars for that.
Yes.
She really looked cool, and it was a Oscar nomination just before it even got created. It was like, whoever got hired for this, it's like, you know you're going to be Oscar nominated, right?
Right.
So just don't fuck it up.
No. I think...
It's like, I'm giving you a nomination.
Yes.
On the platter here. Just don't get me the nomination.
No. Kate Hawley, she's the costume designer.
Okay.
How do you know the name of the costume designer?
I'm a little bit of a production design, like, nerd, especially, I think...
What else has she done? The fact that you know her name.
Well, I mean, I've also been, to be fair, I've been watching a lot of BTS behind Frankenstein.
Cool.
Simply because I came across a clip that spoke about the jewelry pieces in this film.
Okay.
And they stand out because they are archival pieces from Tiffany & Co.
Oh.
That are genuine to the period.
Okay.
So we're talking like 200 year plus pieces that they dug out of the archives, brought it out, matched it to what Guillermo and his costume designer, Kate Hawley, envisioned for the film.
Oh, that's cool.
And these are like one-of-kind pieces. Like some, lovely. I think, believe some of them haven't even been worn. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
I think she has worked with him before.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. She did Pacific Rim and Crimson Peak as well.
It's the same thing with the creature effects designer, Mike Hill. Very close-knit relationship with Guillermo, and they're both big Frankenstein freaks as well. Cool. They love Frankenstein.
Did Mary Shelley write more Frankenstein?
Mm-mm.
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so it was just this kind of one and done.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, it's very swooning and old, and the writing is very doth how the...
Yeah, well, I mean, considering...
It's of its time, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, of course, why would it not be? But it's like, it's sludgy water to read. I liked it, I loved it, and it's not too long.
Yeah.
So it is a great read, but it's quite thick.
Yeah.
It's quite thick dialogue. And quite thick lamenting and very indulgent on it. So it was cool. I loved reading it.
Mm.
So much so that I actually want to ask you guys what the next book should be that I should read. I took great joy in reading Hail Mary, thanks to Chief Lewis.
Love Project Hail Mary.
Project Hail Mary, which is the Gosling film we're going to get next year. It's all very exciting.
Interesting.
Which is written by the same guy who did The Martian.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's very...
Andy Weir.
So it's very... what's the term? Like hard sci-fi.
Mm.
Is it hard?
I think so. I think
or
I get
real
what you're saying.
Sci-fi. Or there's a term. There's a term for it, which is like...
Rooted in
reality,
fact.
Which is how could that actually happen?
Mm.
Of course, it's in the future, but it's not fucking wizards in space. It's like, we're going to run out of oxygen. What do I need to do to do that?
Yes.
Or how do I have enough fuel to get me where I'm going? Like, it's all very smart. I read Life of Chuck recently.
Oh, cool.
Which is the short written by Stephen King.
Yes.
Which is probably one of the more underrated films of the last year or so. I loved Life of Chuck. And it was cool reading the book. The movie was very true to the book.
Okay, cool.
Done in the same interesting order, which is the story of a guy's life in three parts, but in reverse order. And all has the same sort of juju.
Cool.
What can I read next?
Does it have to be something that's been turned into a movie?
Ideally, but not necessarily. No, it's more like I'm working my way through the classics.
The classics. You have read Lord of the Flies.
I've read Lord of the Flies.
Have you read A Tale of Two Cities?
No.
Tale of Two Cities is really good.
That's Dickens, eh?
Yeah, that is a great story.
It is a great story.
Okay. Is it long?
It's longish. It's not too bad.
Why would I give a shit about Dickens?
Because it's just a really great story. The story in A Tale of Two Cities is just really compelling.
Okay. I mean, there's a reason why these classics are classics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved reading Dune, Animal Farm, Slaughterhouse-Five, 1984, Brave New World, Metamorphosis. Like, I'm working my way through all the books that one should have read.
Yeah, yes. I picked up Portrait of Dorian Gray the other day.
Oh.
It was like on sale. It was like $50.
Cool.
Yeah. And sometimes what's really great is they've been I think we're in a good era for book covers these days. And so when you're in the exclusive and you're in the modern classics section, I like the modern classics as opposed to classics.
Yes, okay. Yes.
And I think we're in the golden age of like book covers. Yes. Like they're making fucking great book covers. There was a period in the 90s, 80s, 90s, where they made the shittest book covers in the world. It would be like a blurry nothingness.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And the whole cover would, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest would just be sort of like a blurry hospital passage.
Right.
Mm.
And then at the bottom, it would just say, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's
Nest. Yeah.
Like, there was no design.
It was just a stock photo.
Yeah.
It was like a blurry stock photo.
Yeah.
fuck, man.
Yeah, no, no thought behind.
So nobody like any... wants to read that.
Yeah.
But if you give me a cool cover, like in the gift shop now at the Bioscope is a great collection of postcards, which is classic movies as classic books.
Yes.
Where
yes.
they've like remade them so that they look like a book cover. Cool. And it's like, that would sell.
Yes.
Anyways, I digress. But I totally bought my copy of Frankenstein based on the cover.
Oh, nice.
Which was very good. But speaking of old books and movie adaptations,
yes.
We are about to get The Running Man
in
cinemas. It starts the 14th, which is... Now.
Yeah, it's very soon.
End of the week.
That is the end of the week.
This week.
It's the end of this week.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. And this is based on the Richard Bachman novel.
Yes.
Which the world later found out was Stephen King.
Yeah.
I just love how this dude, as Stephen King,
yeah.
can bang out a shit ton of novels.
Yeah.
yeah.
And also more as another guy.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
second one of the movies published under that name being turned into a movie this year.
What was the first one?
The Long Walk was also published as...
Really?
Greta Bachman novel. Yeah. I could see how perhaps you would want to do that for a few reasons. One would be what comes with the name Stephen King. Perhaps
the expectation.
Everybody expects it to be a depraved, scary, fucked up horror.
yeah.
And also perhaps him personally wanting to prove to himself... that he's not just hype.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could imagine how he could be the guy who very famously was on the brink of poverty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And was thinking of giving it all up.
Yeah.
Before striking, you know, success with Carrie.
Yeah.
He wrote parts of Carrie he wrote about a 4-page manuscript, which he put in the bin, and his wife
picked it up
and said, "This is good."
Yeah,
okay.
And that encouraged him to carry on.
Interesting.
He was at the lowest point in his life, if I remember the story correctly. And
he was working shifts at a Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
And like,
wow.
And then he went on to be like literally the most successful author of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when it comes to books and movies.
Yes.
So yeah, The Running Man is set in 2025, the book.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
And its byline, which Edgar Wright, this director who's now adapted it, has quoted a few times as going, "Don't you think it's interesting? It's a whole thing about, you know, corrupt politicians and this kind of crazy world that we live in." And so like, it just feels great to sort of have this movie now made. The Edgar Wright film, which is coming out this Friday, is not set in 2025.
Yeah.
It's in a far more distant future. But I think a lovely, from having seen it, and also from me not wanting to give too much away, what I can say tonally, for those who don't know, is that it actually feels a little bit like a Black Mirror episode.
Okay.
Mm. So despite it being presented as this kind of fun action, there's a little more to it, which is like, this is a little depressing.
Yes.
In a
smart commentary way.
Okay, yeah.
It's still got all its kind of action. And I think, a little bit earlier to what we were talking about with Michael, I think the normies will just go, "Oh, cool action. And Glenn Powell is so sexy." But like... when you really are watching it from a smarter, more thoughtful point of view, it's like, what's the whole point? And the world's going to shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like, it exists on a few levels. Perrin felt that muddled it a bit.
Okay.
And so tonally, it's a little all over the show.
Mm.
I don't know necessarily whether that's a bad thing.
Okay.
And so I want to encourage folks to still go out.
Yes.
The Bioscope chose to screen it before we'd had a chance to watch it. And I chose it solely on it being Edgar Wright.
Cool.
So for those who don't know, Edgar Wright is one of those filmmakers who we know and love and would back. This is the dude who brought you Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz.
Scott Pilgrim,
Baby Driver
was very sexy. I was kind of hoping that Running Man would have a coolness to it, like Baby Driver, like a sort of a sexiness in its design.
Right.
I think it's true to what the kind of show is in the story.
Right.
But the logo and the look and feel of it looks a little bit like it's a BioPlus advert. Do you know what I mean? It's that part, I think, feels a bit wrong.
Okay.
Well, not wrong. It's true to what the story is, but I don't think that that's necessarily what's going to sell it.
Right. You think he's tapping into like sort of that, at least that tonal aspect that the film from the 80s with Schwarzenegger? Mm.
Yeah, so then there was this film that was made in the 80s with Schwarzenegger,
yeah.
Which the world has completely forgotten about or doesn't really even know existed. Yeah. I watched a trailer of it. It looks horrible. It looks like a bad movie.
It's not great.
It looks like what the content was that Dirk Diggler was shooting in Boogie Nights. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just looks like cheap 80s, like, sort of porn sets.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that I've watched a lot of 80s porn, but like it just feels atrocious in that sense.
Right.
But yeah, we've got this. It feels like Black Mirror. It's dystopian in quite a negative way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where the world, and this makes total sense, and this is why Black Mirror affects one the way that it does, because you kind of know it's true, and we live in a world, so just to speak about the movie itself, we're in this world where we're completely dominated by the shows that we watch.
Mm.
And the biggest show is The Running Man, which the concept is they take these kind of down-on-their-luck basic criminals and the world hunts them for 30 days. You get to kill them if you find them. And if you report them, you also get points. But if you can survive 30 days... you win like crazy amounts of money, and you get a very quick sense that there's the poor and there's the rich.
Yeah.
And when you're poor, you're fucked in this world. You really could struggle to get out of it.
Okay.
And he's got a sick daughter that he's trying to get money for. And yeah, so it's this fun action in that sense. But as I said, this kind of tone that comes in and out is just like, how the show is manipulating it all, like how we are completely manipulated by what we watch and what we see and how dominant that is, is depressing.
Right.
And so when I walked out of the screening room and the distributors were sort of wanting to hear the kind of words and the feedback, when I said depressing, they were like, what? Because in their heads, they were like, we don't want this to be depressing.
Yeah.
But no, it's got fun moments. It's got fun action. I don't think it's the Edgar Wright we know in terms of its kooky quirkiness.
Okay.
But it is at least very much a director that knows what he's doing.
Mm.
Mm.
So it's crafted well in that sense.
Cool.
But yeah, what I then did, and this is what I want to then bring up, is that we were then going through our Netflix list to watch a movie, and I had saved a film called Self-Reliance on Netflix. And it had looked like a charming little indie comedy. Do you know about this movie at all?
Yeah.
It sort of cropped up on Netflix recently, but it is not a new movie.
Okay.
It was made in 2023.
Yeah.
And it stars Jake Johnson, who I'm always here for, who is Nick from New Girl, and kind of basically plays himself in
every role. Didn't he direct it as well?
He wrote and directed it.
Okay.
I love these movies because I think they are shining examples of what filmmakers around the world can do. If you've got a tiny little budget, but you've got a big idea, watch these movies. Watch these smaller movies. Don't watch Running Man.
Right.
You can't fucking make Running Man.
Yeah.
You can't. You need to be Edgar Wright. You need to have hundreds of millions. You got Glenn Powell. You got star power. You can't. Look at these little movies.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, here's the interesting part. Jake Johnson is an everyday guy, down on his luck, living in this routine. Life's a bit shit. He then gets a limo pulled up alongside him, and Andy Samberg is in the limo.
Nice.
Okay? And he's like, holy fuck, are you Andy Samberg? He's like, I'm Andy Samberg. Gets in the limo and he says, do you want to participate in a game?
Right.
Okay. It's a dark web game. It's a little more cryptic, and you'll see the whole process when you watch the movie. But effectively, he gets taken to a place where he gets asked, do you want to participate in this game? This game is the fact that you have 30 days to survive being hunted.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden, I'm like, holy fuck, I'm watching a
Running Man.
I'm watching a multiverse version of Running Man. On the one hand, you've got this huge, you know, Universal or Paramount kind of tentpole juggernaut.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you've got this tiny little budget indie comedy version of basically the same idea.
Okay.
He discovers very quickly in the briefing that the hunters won't kill you if you're with other people.
Okay.
They'll only hunt you when you are left by yourself.
Cool.
So then he basically realizes that if he can always be in close proximity to someone else for the next 30 days, he can survive. So you're like,
right.
Yeah.
At one point, hires a homeless dude to like follow him everywhere. Then there is, just to give you one more like little layer, then there's a lovely play on whether or not this whole thing is in his head.
Okay.
And kind of what it means for everyone else in his life. To sort of understand whether or not he's going crazy or not.
Right.
And it's a fun little examination on mental health.
Okay. Yeah.
And how quickly you can descend into chaos in your life if you are unstable like this.
Okay.
But then I don't want to give more away. But cool. I just love the fact that these two, like, you would have to believe that in 2023, long before Edgar Wright ever got sort of whiffs of being able to adapt the book,
yes,
you've got a Jake Johnson who's probably read the book going, how do I make my version of The Running Man?
Yeah.
They have to be linked. They don't credit Running Man in the thing. They say written and directed by Jake Johnson.
Okay.
But there's no question, like, Hunters, 30 yes. Days,
yeah,
a show.
Yeah.
But obviously what exists in his version is that it's a dark web show.
Right.
So it's not like the whole world is hunting you. In the Edgar Wright 2025 film coming out this weekend in cinemas, including the Bioscope, everyone's in and everyone knows the narrative, whether it's true
part
or
of
not.
That world.
They've been fed the updates. It's live. It's crazy. It's immediate. It's fucking everywhere.
Mm.
Okay. Ubiquitous is the word, right?
Right.
Mm.
We like big words. Okay. I wanted to mention one more thing.
Yeah.
Or a few more things, talking about Netflix. When is it okay to put up your Christmas decorations? Okay, that's the biggest debate.
Yes.
There's two things.
Yeah.
Visually and orally, like,
okay.
Your ears.
Yes.
The moment you hear, this is my rule,
yeah.
Okay? And tell me whether you agree.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you hear Mariah Carey in the shopping center,
yeah,
that's one. You're allowed to start putting up Christmas stuff.
Okay.
The second one is when, on Netflix, within the top 10 movies,
yes,
you start seeing Christmas movies.
Yes.
You are then allowed. So it's not, there's no date.
Yeah.
It's when that happens.
Okay.
It's when the world gives you a Christmas movie on Netflix and now there is a fuck ton.
Oh,
not that, because they always exist. They're always there. And then the algorithms push them back.
Yeah.
But when they make the top 10, you can start putting up Christmas.
Okay.
So that has happened.
Oh, Lord.
And Leslie loves Christmas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I have to love Christmas. And I do. I do. And I love it when she is excited and happy and gets into the festive mood. So I've already watched two Christmas movies that are both horrible. But
as the tradition dictates.
As the tradition. So haul out the holly and I fucking can't even remember what the other one was.
And it's romantic in nature. There has to be the romantic subplot.
It's the chick from Mean Girls.
Yeah,
one of
who,
the
who's made
characters
a
of Mean Girls,
thousand Christmas movies.
Who just went, I am going to be the Michael Bublé of movies.
Yeah.
I'm going to just come out of my cave and make Christmas movies.
Mm.
There is also, I can't remember the name, but remember Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah, right.
She's in a Christmas movie on Netflix now.
She's had a very interesting later career. She's got a little part in Begonia.
Oh, really?
So she's in Yorgos Lanthimos's Begonia.
Nice.
But she's also doing like some Christmas movies.
Yeah. I mean, like, isn't it one of those things where you want to revive your career a bit? So what do? You used to do like a Hallmark Christmas movie, or in this case now, like Netflix is now the Hallmark of Christmas movies.
Yeah. If you want to put regular bread on the table of your family, you do those movies. Because that's the backbone of the movie industry.
Yeah.
Is that kind of content. Because it's consistent, it's okay, it pays the bills. The bigger Hollywood stuff is such swing or miss. You might do one every like 2 or 3 years.
Exactly.
But if you're just that like character actor guy that just does those ones, you survive.
Yeah.
I just want to touch on one thing. We got halfway through the first episode of All's Fair.
Oh, okay.
So we brought it up in a Hey Did You Guys See, which was, Hey Did You Guys See, Kim Kardashian is in a TV show in Netflix coming up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is, Graham, one of the most stacked fucking shows. Glenn Close, Sarah Paulson, Naomi Watts.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The woman from One Battle After Another, Tiana Taylor.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Kim Kardashian.
Yes.
Who, let's not forget, has been acting.
Yes.
She is an actress.
Yeah.
Those shows are basically scripted.
Yeah.
They are acting.
And yet again, in another Ryan Murphy production as well.
Where they are definitely getting together to go, how do we uplift women? How do we fight back? And how do we become powerful, strong women?
Right.
And I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get me wrong. When I shit on this show, the intentions of it are great.
Yeah.
And they are divorce attorneys.
Right.
Giving the woman what they deserve in these fights.
Okay.
But the show is fucking atrocious.
This is what I've heard.
It is hammy as fuck. And the characters, especially Kim Kardashian, is blank. She is this blank canvas.
Mm.
And you watch her and as she moves through her home and her husband, and it's so badly watch it as an experiment for how bad you can make a character.
Okay.
Yeah. And just how cunty you can make women act towards each other as well.
And they're all just so perfect in that they're all just so beautifully dressed, cheersing their champagne as they go through their next clients. It's like, that's not how fucking lawyers work. It's frantic, it's crazy, it's intense. You got to kind of take the heels off to do the work, and then you can put the moments for the heels on. But you can't have your heels perfect and on the whole time.
Yeah.
Mm.
It feels fake, it feels wrong.
Okay.
How she juggles her home life and her very successful career should be a challenge.
Mm.
And that's you can show that a woman can do that.
Right.
But you could show her, you could give her more depth by showing her struggle to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's what fucking life is. But instead, it's just, she just moves through the world perfect.
Right.
She wants to show that she's perfect. And you're like, that's not how this fucking thing works.
No.
And it just reads as wrong.
Okay. Yeah.
So we got halfway through the first episode.
Wow.
Halfway through. And that's where it's going to stay.
Yeah. No.
You're going to have to remove it from your timeline. Yeah. Like 3 months later.
Yeah, you're still going to be there.
Oh,
continue
shit.
Watching? No.
Yeah, nah.
So yeah, it's just interesting that it exists.
Yeah.
It's there. It's interesting. And she also wants to put out a certain thing in the world. She wants to be, don't forget, Kim Kardashian is who she is because of her dad.
Yes.
Who was her dad? He was a lawyer that represented O.J. Simpson. So don't forget that there is this like law lawyer link.
Yep.
She has been studying it and wanting to be a lawyer. She has sat next to Trump to try and advocate for restructuring of American law.
Yep.
She is trying. She is trying to show the world that she is more. And I'm for that, and that's okay.
Mm.
But it's like not like this.
Yeah.
What she should have done is like a heartfelt Netflix docuseries about her doing law work.
Okay. Yes.
Not this fucking look how cool I am.
Yes.
Chinging my champagne.
We might get that. We still might get that. I mean, she's still in the process of earning her law degree.
Yes.
From what I understand.
No, give us that. Give us something more real, because the show just feels AI generated. It just it lacks a soul.
Yeah.
And you've got Naomi Watts, who we all know is a great actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Delivering lines that feel cheesy, and you're like, oh, it's in the writing. Yeah. It's just in the writing. Yeah. It's in the water. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think the only appealing thing, or one of the most amusing things coming from that trailer, I haven't watched it, I've just seen the trailer, was Sarah Paulson's character, who I think is like...
She got backstabbed by them, so she's the sort of vengeful, I'm coming for you bitches.
Yeah, she's the cunty. Skanks. She's the cunty one. Right. Yeah. And, I mean, it just shows like the absolute ridiculousness of the show, like what they're going to go, like the motions that they're going to go through just to like one up each other, that she dresses up like Kim Kardashian's character and basically walks into a meeting and is like, this is just the preview for my Halloween costume. This overdressed, vapid, slutty whore, that is the theme for this year's Halloween costume. And she looks exactly like her, same haircut.
Right.
Probably like sort of one of those like chest things to bring up the boobs. But yeah, that's the most amusing thing about the trailer.
Yeah.
I've realized we haven't even touched on
Predator. Or Pluribus.
I'm sorry, Graham. We've sidelined you.
There's been a lot to talk about today.
There's been a lot.
Yes. It's a busy week.
We should chat about Predator Badlands.
Let's speed run them.
Yeah. I think Pluribus, I want to watch. I think it's, as a TV show, will be around for a bit. And
a few weeks.
Needs to grow a bit.
I can at least give a premise of it, so if people want to watch it or not.
Well, let's just touch on that again. So what is Pluribus and how it started? It's because it started. Now, where is it?
Apple TV.
It's on Apple TV.
Yeah. So this is Vince Gilligan's new show. Vince Gilligan is the guy who created Breaking Bad. Okay. I actually don't want to give like too much away because all the marketing around this has been very deliberately vague.
Yes.
Like
so be vague.
They've kind of kept things under wraps. So I'll talk about mostly the first episode. Most of what I'll talk about happens in the first like half hour of the first episode. Okay. So it's the setup.
Yes.
So setup is they don't even say who it is. One of these agencies that is like scanning space detects a signal coming from space, like a repeating signal. So it's coming from, so it's a signal coming from somewhere. They don't know what it is. Pretty quickly, this happens very quickly. I think it takes place over about a year, but it happens in like 15 minutes of screen time. They figure out what the signal is. It's a like genetic sequence. I think it's an mRNA sequence.
Okay.
So they create that mRNA sequence. Initially, it seems like it's doing nothing because they're testing animals. Then through means, it spreads to humans. Humans then spreads out of the humans. Very, very quickly. Like it seems to happen like over a matter of days. Okay. It's like the entire planet is now infected with this thing, except for one person.
Okay.
What they're sort of infected by is initially it seemed like a virus that made people happy, but that's not quite it. What it's done is they describe it as like a psychic glue. So everyone in the world is now like mentally connected to everyone else in the world.
Okay.
Except for one person. For some reason, this one person, this author, I can't remember the character's name. I think her name's Carol. She's an author who like hates all of her own work. She's like the self-hating artist.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, she's immune.
Okay.
And everyone else on the planet is now in this like sort of hive mind sort of phase.
Okay.
It's incredible.
Okay, you love it.
It is.
Okay, good.
The first episode, I've only watched the first episode. There are two out now. I'll watch the second one today. Okay. It is awesome.
Okay.
It is such a great setup.
Mm.
The writing's great.
Let's keep chatting about it.
Writing's great. Acting's great. It's all like, it seems like it's going to, I don't know where it's going to go. There's a million places it could go from this first episode, but it is really good. I think it's going to be a great one. I'm excited.
Okay. I have realized I've got to go do some work.
Yes.
So I'm going to go to the back because, Claudia, I love the fact that you came and visited. But we've got to do some work here. So I'm going to go and do that.
Right.
I'll see you guys now.
Bye.
Bye.
So, new Predator movie's out.
Yes.
I love Predator.
Me too.
I'm a big fan. Well, of some of them. I think as a franchise, I don't like Predator 2. Predators is fine. The Predator is awful.
Awful.
One of the worst movies ever made. Genuinely one of the worst movies ever made.
I got halfway through it and I was like, I can't watch this.
It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's one of those autism is superpowers movies. It's so stupid. It's insufferable.
Yeah.
But now we have Predator Badlands.
Elle Fanning in a backpack.
Elle Fanning is, she's Yoda in this one. So this is Dan Trachtenberg, the same guy who did Prey.
which I love.
I love that.
Prey was incredible.
And what was the animation?
I can't remember, but I haven't watched that one yet.
Great.
Okay,
it's
cool.
It's very good.
It's like an anthology thing.
Yeah, I liked it.
I've heard it's good. Sick. Okay, so this one is kind of like an inversion of the whole Predator thing, where your Predator is your main character. Instead of the person is the main character, your Predator is now your central figure.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. He's like, he's a little guy. He's the little Predator. That's his whole thing. He's he's smaller than all the other Predators. He's like, he's like the runt. They call him the runt.
Yeah.
And the setup of this is the big bad dad Predator sends his brother of this little one to kill him because he's small. He's small, he's unworthy. You know, the whole their whole like society, which makes absolutely no sense. And is insane. Instead, what he does is he decides he's going to prove himself as a predator who's worthy of being predators. So he goes to this other planet called, I think it's called Genna, where he's going to kill an unkillable monster.
Yeah.
This monster that no other predator has ever been able to kill.
Yes. So that's doing the impossible to prove himself.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's our setup. And it's rad. I enjoyed it. I think it's a lot of fun. I think something it does quite effectively is the whole thing with the Predator movies is your central figure is like your most vulnerable character.
Yes.
Up against this bigger thing. That's still like in play. He's in an environment where now the Predator is the vulnerable one.
Yes.
In an, like an unfamiliar environment where he's the one in danger. Very cool. Like sub inversion of the typical Predator.
Yeah. And then having to put up with this, she's an android.
She's an android. She's a Weyland-Yutani android.
Yes.
Which is the big bad company in all the Alien movies.
Yes. A nice little bit of crossover that they've been teasing about for how long?
Yeah, well, they've done Alien versus Predator before. Both of them are bad.
Yeah.
So I kind of, they'll probably get there. They'll make another Alien versus Predator movie, but part of me wishes this is where they would kind of stop in terms of like crossover, the idea of like, oh, Weyland-Yutani exists in this universe. That's enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're kind of doing what they're always doing, which is looking for bioweapons.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so she's the android who they meet. They end up kind of teaming up because she's part of a team that's been on this planet for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So she like knows the lay of the land. She knows the dangers.
Yeah.
They team up. Well, it's half of Elle Fanning. The reason she's in a backpack is because she's an android. She doesn't have any legs. They've been like ripped off by this thing that he's there to hunt.
Yes. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but from my understanding, the making of this film, she did actually spend a lot of time on that performer's back.
She's literally like on his back. They did it in a bunch of different ways.
Yes.
Like sometimes she's literally just standing and they'll like cut it out. Other times she's on like what looks like a standing wheelchair. So she's like standing on wheels. Sometimes she's in like a rig that's just like holding her up.
Yeah, her legs and then it's just like kind of like moving along on a track. And,
so that's actually like her there for a lot of it.
Interesting,
which is interesting.
It's funny that she's sort of in a film like this where she's backpacking along with someone and then she's also in Death Stranding, right?
Oh, like she's in Death Stranding. Yeah, the second one. I haven't played that yet. Yeah. Don't have a PlayStation.
I see there's like a lot of like sort of like funny memes out there, like comparing the two.
Okay.
Badlands and Death Stranding.
She actually plays two characters in this. There's two androids.
Oh, all right.
That are like paired. She plays both of them.
Okay.
So she does have legs at some point. But all in all, I think it's very cool. If you like Predator movies, it's in line with other Predator movies.
Yes.
It's super well made. It's cool that the Predator is like a character and the Predator talks like throughout the whole movie. Doesn't speak English, which I really liked.
Okay,
I was like, there's a point in the movie. So throughout the whole beginning, it's all subtitled. And then there's a point where he first meets Elle Fanning's character, whose name I can't remember. But she, when she first starts talking, you can't understand. She's just saying something. And then she does like a little android thing. It's like, and she explains to him, okay, now you'll just hear a language that you'll understand and I'll hear a language that I understand. I'm just translating. And I was like, okay, he's going to start talking English now. But he doesn't. It's still just like the Predator language throughout the whole thing and it's all subtitled.
Yes.
I think that's always an interesting choice when you have like a big, like expensive movie where like half the movie is subitled.
Yeah, yeah.
Most it's a bold audiences choice. Hate that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I like that they're doing that.
But it's at least authentic to the, you know.
Yeah. You got to keep it that way. You can't have your Predator talking English.
No, no. That's total immersion breaking for me.
But it works. Like having the central character be the Predator. Like they've designed it in a way and performed it in a way where it's like you get invested enough.
Yeah.
Without it being like, because like what Prey does is it shows how well that basic Predator formula works by just making small changes, you change the time period and you put a new character in there and now it's a whole new movie.
Yeah.
But the premise is exactly the same.
Exactly.
This kind of changes the premise and keeps the Predator, or makes the Predator the central character, but without betraying kind of what the Predator's about.
Yes.
I think it does that effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't make him like a little ooboo baby. He's not like overly sympathetic. He's not like too emotive.
Yeah.
He's like, they do just enough to make you like,
yeah,
buy into this guy as a character.
And it's a nice change of pace as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Predator is one of those ones like Terminator, where it's fallen into this thing where they keep trying to repeat successes instead of doing new things.
Yeah.
Terminator's terrible for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But now they've kind of, because Prey was well received, they were like, okay, we have a little bit of juice here. We can take a little bit more of a risk.
Yeah, yeah. You just wonder though, like, how much more legs this franchise has,
exactly,
after something like this. But I mean, I think Dan Trachtenberg has done some good stuff.
And he's done three now that are all like quite radically different from each other. So
yeah, yeah. You know, and they've been interesting takes.
Yes. Yeah. And now Fede Alvarez has said he wants to do Alien versus Predator with Dan Trachtenberg, which is interesting.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's going to be an interesting one to look out for. Yeah.
I think if you're going to do Alien versus Predator, it has to be something that's filmmaker-led, like a Fede Alvarez and a Dan Trachtenberg, like directors.
Yeah.
You know, put them in charge. Don't make it like a, you know, committee studio film.
Yeah.
Like, take a swing at it, guys.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it.
Exactly.
I don't care if they don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you still here?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. I love the fact that you can hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before you go,
yes,
I wanted to tell you I wanted to give you the three films.
Yes.
That
please.
We did the Guess What Movie Am I.
Yeah.
The first one, the science fiction, elaborate costumes, Mila Jovovich. What did we think?
Fifth Element.
Yeah, there's the one in this card that just makes it fucking obvious, which is my plot involves finding four elemental stones.
Yeah.
That's a big giveaway.
I think we'll always like keep that one out.
Yeah, that was a favorite of mine. One of
cool.
Yeah,
that's great.
Besson,
yes.
Yeah, he's
he sounded like such a dick in real life. Oh my god, problematic dude. The other one was a young adult novel. Anonymous correspondence is central to my plot.
Yeah, I have no idea what this is.
I feature a character codenamed Blue. I'm an LGBTQ+ teen film. Simon.
Let me take a gander. I Love Simon, yes.
Did you have that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did. Okay. I was like,
I don't know what that movie is.
Cole would have gotten that one.
Yeah. No.
Cole's spoken about
closeted
Love,
gay
Simon.
Teen.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't remember if they're doing like letters with each other in their lockers or if it's like email.
And then there's like a sequel TV series.
Yes.
That's one of the clues.
Yes.
Okay. And then the last one, I'm a romantic comedy based on a Hungarian play.
Yeah.
We all know Hungarian theater.
Right.
Yes.
Directed by Nora Ephron, centered around an online romance. What did we say?
You Got Mail.
Yeah, that was my thought. The remake of You've Got Mail.
Yeah. What was the first? Was there a first one?
You know, there was a first one where it's not like emails. It's like letter mail.
Letters, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, because the last sort of one I didn't say in terms of cues was I star Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Listen, thank you.
Yes.
What a lovely day.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you coming in and visit.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, we hope to have you keep coming and joining us.
Yeah.
Yes, I would love to. Yeah, when the time opens up, definitely.
Yeah, like it. No, but you know, you come in and out of the video store all the time. So
we'll have
you join on one soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love being here. Thank you guys.
Cool.
Home base is thevideostore.co.za and we hope to see you again soon.
Yes.
And yeah, so we've got this guest episode which will hopefully be banked soon.
Cool.
Which is to talk about Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Yeah.
So yeah, that should be rad.
Very nice.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.